Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Well, the year that was actually a decent one for equity markets. And despite all the volatility and headwinds that and hiccups that the markets dealt with, we actually saw some equity stock markets like the S&P 500 record very impressive gains of about 29%. And this despite some of the volatility and uncertainty that we talked about. Well, heading into 2020, it seems that Citi Private Bank is also advising some of their clients to try to stay positive in a negative yielding world. And one of their key pieces of advice also is to try and not to read too much into some of the geopolitical events and some of the shocks and negative reports that might tend to rattle markets in the short term. Well, to get a better idea of what Citi Private Bank is seeing for markets in terms of opportunities and methods to hedge risks, we're speaking now on the line with Mr. Ken Peng, who's the head of Asia Investment Strategy at Citi Private Bank. Ken, good afternoon and welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
All right. So, Ken, let's start off with a very interesting chart that you actually had at the Market Outlook a while ago. And one of the things that Citi pointed out is that market reactions to geopolitical events tend to be rather short-lived. Can you tell us more about what Citi Private Bank actually saw in the reviews? And if ultimately the advice is for investors to maybe just ignore some of these geopolitical events, even though they tend to shock markets, be them for the short or medium term?
Yes, well, first of all, I think these events are very meaningful and very impactful for the people who are directly involved. And I think I definitely want to pay respect to that. But for the global economy and for global markets, the impact tend to be more fleeting, right? I just give an example of 9/11/2001. And the equity decline in the United States, S&P 500 down 12% in the following 10 days, but then in the following months it's completely recovered, right? Chinese equities, for example, at that time, September 12th was kind of the bottom, and the following 3 months it went up by 36%. So what drove those equities were earnings growth. They were the fact that the world was coming out of the dot-com bubble. So a lot of these major macro undercurrents at that time was much more meaningful than the geopolitical event itself, and hence the impact tended to have been pretty small or brief.
Okay. So, Ken, using that also, can you recap for us Citi's private's outlook for 2020 in terms of global markets? You have said that staying positive in a negative yielding world is going to be important. How is it going to be easier to do that in 2020, given the fact that there are some folks are pointing to a handful of developments that could actually give inspiration to markets on the upside?
Sure. That's a multi-pronged story.
Sure.
So let me talk about the growth side first, and then I'll come and address the yield situation. Yeah. So now we think global economic growth this year is going to be slightly stronger than what it was last year. Right. Looking at global economy GDP wise, 2.9% last year, probably going to 3.1 or so. And so why is there a expectation for that? So we think there are mainly two reasons. One is that inventories have declined in 2019 because production fell more than demand, right? So that ran down inventories, and now for whatever we sell in 2020, we'll have to produce, right? So that's a pickup in production. And secondly, the decline in interest rates was substantial in 2019, and typically, when we have drops of interest rates of that size, the following year has seen industrial recovery, has seen economic activity recovery. And so based on these two observations, we think this year is going to record better macro numbers than last year. So that's what gave us more confidence in the growth, and hence we prefer equities. But on the fixed income side, we still see areas where there's decent yield, and we want to be in fixed income spaces where there's some room of spread narrowing, such as to be able to offset the potential upside rates, risking rates. We see, for example, in Asia, the average investment grade bond still has about 20 basis points premium over that of the U.S. If you look at high yield bonds in Asia, we're still looking at 150 basis points of pickup. So there's still space.
Okay. Where, in terms of the high-yield space, in terms of Asia bonds, are you finding some of these opportunities? Because we know the bond space in Asia, rather vast and also diverse depending on what market we're looking at. Are there any particular markets that City Private is noticing as having yielding more fruit than others, say, in terms of the, in terms of bonds for in Asia?
Sure. Actually, we think within Asia high-yield, we still like the Chinese property developer space. Well, that's a big chunk of that high yield space, about half. But basically, you know, two elements. One on the policy side, the lower tier cities in China are easing purchase restrictions, and so that's going to keep cash flows relatively healthy for these developers. On the technical side, the government has limited the ability for developers to issue offshore bonds, right? So new issuance would be meant to repay old ones, and hence, you know, the net supply is going to be more limited, you know, in 2020 compared to 2019, and so the technicals is also favorable. And on valuations, the spread for those bonds is still much wider than similar, say, property developer markets, you know, other parts of Asia, such as Indonesia, for example. So basically, we have a year where these developers are likely to stay relatively healthy, and there's still some good value for that in that sector for potential spread narrowing.
Now, I'm glad you brought up. I find it interesting that you brought up the Chinese high yield bonds, especially the property sector, because one of the headlines that seemed to have dominated some of the news cycles in the fixed income space were the number of defaults that we saw with regards to bonds in China, and also some companies missing some of their payments. Now, this might be small in comparison to the entire or the trillions of dollars that we see in the Chinese bond market. But is this something that enters? How does this enter the calculus of City Private when they look at some of these Chinese high yield bonds? And does it make it tricky for you guys when you're trying to identify what bonds in the high yield space in China to pick out?
Sure. So that's definitely a very valid question. All right. So first, let's run through some numbers, right?
Sure.
So in 2018, the amount of defaults was the peak, right? And in 2019, the amount of defaults actually started to come down, right? So before 2015, there were no defaults in China, and that was certainly abnormal, and that was basically, since 2015, you've had a regulatory environment where there's more tolerance for defaults and for markets to define what you know, how to process those defaults. And so we're seeing a pickup in defaults, and I think that could continue. We will see more and more defaults from year after year, and that just kind of becomes like a new normal. You know, in an economy as the size of China, having these defaults isn't particularly strange. So now, within those defaults that we have seen, the ones that have caught more attention tended to have been the local government platforms and some of the industrial providers, producers, and that's likely to be an area that's going to have additional weakness, right? So the local government platforms are poorly supported financing wise, particularly as land sales continue to decline in China, and for the industrials, they typically are in overcapacity industries. So these are going to be something that we're just going to have to deal with, right? But this is very different from property developer issuers who have access to the offshore market. They tend to be stronger organizations. They tend to be fairly large in size, and they tend to have, you know, either decent bank land bank or decent cash flows, or both, right? So you know, we are very selective in terms of our recommendations for our clients in terms of what kind of high yield bonds we really want, right? So we want business with real assets, we want business with good business model and decent cash flow expectations. So those are very important points when we do look at this market.
Well, fair enough. We're still speaking to Ken Peng, who's the head of Asia Investment Strategy at Citi Private Bank. Ken, I wanted to touch on another market that seemed to have dominated the doom and gloom headlines last year, but actually outperformed some of these expectations. That's Hong Kong. Despite all of those worries of the unrest, we actually saw the Hang Seng close about 9% higher and Hong Kong blow everyone out of the water with regards to IPO listings in that city. Given all of this, and despite all of the ongoing concerns and question marks that outsiders looking in might have about Hong Kong, what is Citi Private's view on Hong Kong markets heading into 2020? Do you think that they can stay resilient and maybe even surprise market watchers yet again in the new year?
Yeah, so one of the things I want to talk about, the performance numbers you just named, is actually underperformance, a significant underperformance. I mean, global equity markets are up 28%, right? So MSCI China up 24%, Chinese A shares up 36% last year. Hong Kong's 9% is a significant underperformance. That said, I felt that the Hong Kong's market performance since the airport instances last year has actually been, we have not seen a lower low since that episode. And so basically, you see Hong Kong becoming more resilient, and the people of Hong Kong, investors in Hong Kong, have better conviction that the financial system will remain intact, and that remains to be the case. So this year, what we're expecting is actually a pretty significant rebound in Hong Kong's economic activity, right? So in the fourth quarter, economic growth likely was pretty deeply negative for a developed market like Hong Kong's. It was worse than SARS, worse than the global financial crisis, because there was unrest on the streets and simply there were no visitors and retail sales completely collapsed. Because the infrastructure remains intact, both the physical and the financial, I think so long as, as soon as the streets quiet down, that activity will come back. Right, so that's one of the contrarian calls that we have is Hong Kong retail might do better almost immediately in the first quarter of this year, and that's going to have an impact on those equities. And separate from that, so I think that the listing, the capital raising that has happened in Hong Kong, also shows that the plumbing still works, right? And so these predictions about long-term decline, I think that's probably still too early.
All right. And Ken, very, very quickly, we can't let you go without asking about Citi Private's outlook for Singapore's markets. Against this backdrop, where does Singapore markets fit in terms of Citi's outlook and prognosis?
Yeah, so Singapore is a very interesting place. It is the hub for global, one of the hubs for global trade, in particular trade that goes through Southeast Asia. All right, so in 2019, we have seen an acceleration of supply chain relocation out of China. And ASEAN countries, Vietnam, ranking way ahead of others, but, we also saw significant inflows for Philippines, for Thailand, and Malaysia as well. And so that's basically an increase in industrial activity in this region, and Singapore stands to benefit from that, because of additional flows. So now that we have a phase one deal in place, I think exporters, traders can move on, right? Because, last year, even though the trade war was between U.S. and China, that Southeast Asia actually saw a greater decline in exports, right? Because exports to China fell a lot more than exports to the U.S., right? Because of the damage this has done to the processing trade. So when you put those elements together, one, I would expect ASEAN export growth to rebound actually even more strongly than China's this year. That's going to lift activity, I think, in this city as well. And so, last year, GDP growth here in Singapore was like 0.8%. I would expect that to go above 2% by the end of this year. And I think that difference is going to be pretty significant for the equity market. So we're particularly favoring the industrial sector, logistics, and we also think that the banks can do fairly well in this background as well.
Ken Peng, head of Asia Investment Strategy at Citi Private Bank, we appreciate you spending time with us and sharing your thoughts with us after your investment outlook for 2020. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.
Thank you for your time, sir.